So a few weeks ago, I was mentioning, some of you will remember, we had just done our, my wife and I had just done our parent-teacher conference, and my wife is from India, and she's a tiger mom, and she's all over when, you know, now it's all online. So she knows the homework assignments. She knows what grades they got. She knows. So for 7th and 9th graders, they got somebody up in their business all day, every day. And her point is, I was raised in India. This is how I was raised, and this is what I'm going to do, and I don't care what your peers think about it. This is. So we're talking to the teachers, and my wife does not want to hear, how's my son doing? She wants to know what can be better. And she's asking questions like, you know, she's not just looking for a little pat on the back. And a 7th grade teacher tells, who was also the teacher of my 9th grader, tells my wife the story of the frustration the teachers are having, and it's to the point that they're apoplectic about it because the kids have their computers open, and because now it's by Zoom, if they had their computer open while you're walking around, you could look over their shoulder and see if they're playing games. But in this case, you can't really see what they're doing, and you can tell that they're distracted, and it makes it very difficult to truly teach, to engage. It's frustrating. And that has been top of mind, and that's why I'm glad for this next conversation. Matt Walsh is going to talk to us about a piece he wrote for the Daily Wire. Kids are struggling to focus during online school. Now they're being diagnosed with ADHD. This is cruel. And I want to get to that, but I do want to say by way of introduction, Matt Walsh is one of my favorite follows on Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, don't get on there. But if you are, Matt Walsh blog is his blog. He is what I would consider grumpy in a Bill Buckley sort of way, an H.L. Mencken. So he's sort of a young H.L. Mencken, if you will. And then I find out he's originally from Baltimore, so it just makes sense. But he's very witty. He's a man of great Christian faith and solid, conservative, consistent beliefs. And I learn a lot reading from him. He writes for the Daily Wire. His columns are read by millions every month. And he does not shy away from taking on tough issues in the culture war, politics, religion, and more. The piece is entitled, Kids Are Struggling to Focus During Online School. Now they're being diagnosed with ADHD. This is cruel. Matt, what made you want to talk about this, and what did you find out?
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for that introduction, by the way. It's very nice. This months ago, I actually predicted that, I think I said this on Twitter and on my own show, that what we have to watch out for is at a certain point we're going to hear about a spike in ADHD diagnoses because of the online school and, you know, related to online classes. And this is one of those, usually I really enjoy saying I told you so. This is one of those times where I actually don't really enjoy it, because that's what we've seen now. The media is reporting that there has been this skyrocketing epidemic of ADHD in recent months, even going back to like last March, just a few weeks after really they started the online school thing. And this to me is horrifying, because what we're doing is we're putting kids, like you talked about, you know, they're stuck in front of a computer screen all day. When we already know that before all this, our kids were spending way too much time staring at screens. And what we as parents were always trying to get our kids away from the screens. And then this happens, and now they're being forced to sit in front of screens even more. They're having a lot of trouble being engaged with the material, because it's unnatural to learn that way. I know me, you know, as an adult, when I have to attend like a Zoom meeting for 20 minutes, which isn't even that often, but I all of a sudden find myself experiencing ADHD, because I have a lot of trouble listening and caring and staying engaged to this voice, this disembodied voice on a screen. Now imagine that you're 12 years old and you're doing this, and it's not for 20 minutes, but it's every day for hours. It's quite natural for kids to struggle in that environment. But our response is to look at them and to say, oh, well, that must mean that you're disordered. It's not that what we're doing is disordered. It's not that you're being put in a disordered environment expected to learn by staring at a screen all day. No, the problem is you. It's in your brain and your mind, and you're the problem. And I do find that just to be cruel.
You pointed in the article to an NBC News story about a young lady named Isabella, and it's sort of really, it's saddening that here's a young lady who was doing very well, and then in the Zoom environment, not so much. Could you talk to that?
Yeah, this is presented in the NBC article. It's kind of a standard case. A lot of this sort of thing. This was a girl that was apparently, you know, basically an A student in class, doing very well, excelling, and then she's put behind a screen, and all of a sudden she's having all these sorts of problems that she never had in school. And the article talks about how her mother herself had been diagnosed ADHD, and so that's where her mind immediately went. She thought, well, this must be the problem here. And now she's taking her to a psychologist and everything and going through this process in the hopes that she'll get the diagnosis and then, I guess, be put on the drugs. But this is what I'm talking about. To me, it's now, I'm just someone, I'm some guy reading the article. I'm not there every day, so it's easy for me to say. But based on what we're told, pretty clear to me that this is not a girl that has any sort of disorder. She has no problem whatsoever. There's nothing wrong with her at all. It's just that she is struggling in this particular environment. This method of teaching doesn't work for her. It doesn't mean that she's diseased. It doesn't mean that she needs medication. There's something wrong with the way that they're trying to teach this girl, and she's not alone. I think there might be some kids out there. I've talked to a few parents. I've talked to plenty of parents, I'm sure you have, about this, and some parents have told me that it's gone great and that their kids are doing well, which is fantastic. If it works for you, then good. But for most kids, it doesn't. It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so we have to ask ourselves, does that mean that most kids have a mental disorder, or does it mean that there's a disorder in the way that we are approaching their education right now?
Well, you know, it's interesting because both of my boys actually preferred through the spring of last year, they preferred once we switched it. They came home for spring break and never went back through the end of the school year, right? And they both found that they learned better, their grades actually improved, and they were sort of unique, but they're very digital kids. They're very comfortable with digital things and doing things this way. But I found that at the beginning of the fall, they weren't wanting to do that anymore. They missed the camaraderie. They missed the engagement. They missed the experience. But let me play devil's advocate for a moment, Matt Walsh. I think that a lot of people now work from home and will continue to do that. And so the likelihood that we're going to have those awful conference calls with the phone out in the middle, but now it's going to be the screen, may be the wave of the future, or at least we're going to develop increasing familiarity with that. Isn't there something to be said for, well, learn to engage on that level? Because I, like you, if I have never done a Zoom call, but if I had to, I'd be doing 10 other things while that was going on. If we were in the same room, I'll pay attention, but not on a Zoom call. But shouldn't we maybe be teaching kids to do that?
I think what you're talking about is a silver lining. Like, if you have to find a positive to all this, then maybe that's it. That's pretty much all. That's it. That's the only possible silver lining. But it's not the ideal situation for a whole host of reasons. It's just, first of all, I would say that maybe society is going that direction. I don't think it should. I hope it doesn't. So I think to accept that reasoning, I'd almost have to accept that, that society should go that way. I think we should struggle against that. I think that's something that we should oppose. And once, you know, especially as the coronavirus continues to fade away, as apparently it seems to be, or receding anyway, the infection rates are slowing. And, we know eventually we're going to be through the pandemic. And when that happens, I think that those of us who would rather live like normal human lives and not be robots staring at screens all day, we should really make an effort and make sure that we get back out and we make clear that that's what we want. But aside from that, regardless, I think that that's, with school, we have to ask, what's the best way? It's not just about preparing kids for the professional environment. That's not the only reason we send them to school. We send them to school to be educated. We send them to school to be shaped and formed as people. I think the education system is not very good at a lot of this stuff already, right? But what we're doing now only makes it worse. So,
well, and I think what's most bothersome, you see in Northern California, where the school board there thought they were having a private chat, and it turns out it was set to public, and you hear this very arrogant and derisive tone toward the parents that, well, they just want their babysitters back. I think what bothers folks, and this is what bothers me about this, is that there is the sense that the reason for the closing of the school is not related to the health of the children or the teachers. The reason for the closing of the schools is in places where these teachers' unions have incredible political clout, and this is a flex for them, and in many cases so that they can go to the Dominican Republic and sit on the beach or vacation or do whatever else they want. And the sense is we, the taxpayers, are paying for this, and this is just wrong.
Yeah, we know it's absolutely wrong, and we've known that almost from the beginning. The one thing, there are a lot of things about the coronavirus that we thought we knew in the beginning that turned out not to be true. But the one thing that we knew from the beginning that has turned out to be true is that it doesn't really affect kids that much. It's not a huge danger to kids. Kids, in fact, the flu poses a greater risk to kids, especially younger kids, than does the coronavirus. So we've known that all along. That's always been the case. And that should have been, we want to talk about silver linings, even though the coronavirus obviously is a horrible thing, it's killed a lot of people, that should have been a real silver lining that we identified and took advantage of, that at least it doesn't, I mean, think about how extra horrible this would have been if it affected kids the way that it affects the elderly.
Yeah.
And think about,
which, by the way, the flu attacks children and this thing doesn't.
Exactly. But you look at what do we do? What do the schools do during flu season? The answer is basically nothing. I mean, you might hear there are some rare cases where sometimes schools have shut down very temporarily because when there's a big flu outbreak. But for the most part, the schools do nothing. They just continue about their business, and some kids get the flu. And most of the time, vast majority of cases, kids are fine. They stay home for a few days. Yet with the coronavirus, which is less lethal and less of a danger, we shut down. There was no reason for it, really. It couldn't be justified based on the facts. And the teachers that, like you talked about at the beginning, a lot of teachers, and I've talked to some teachers also, many teachers are very frustrated with this and want to get back to school because they know that this isn't working. And, you know, they actually want to teach kids. They actually want to do their job, and they know they can't really do it over Zoom. But the teachers that are happy to continue and want to continue doing this, yeah, it's hard to see it as anything other than this is basically a paid vacation for them that's been going on for a year, and they want it to continue. And I think it's disgraceful.
But it's like the old line by James Lane Allen, adversity doesn't build character, it reveals it. It feels like that COVID revealed the fractures and fissures in our public institutions. It didn't cause them, it just revealed them. The undue influence, the inappropriate influence of teachers' unions, and the extent to which they are not advocates for public education, I think, for instance, is one of the things we learned here. The desire to grab hold of tyrannical power by despots in public health positions. I think there are several of those areas that have simply been revealed that we probably wouldn't have seen otherwise.
Yeah, I think revealing is the right way to put it. Another thing that's been revealed, which maybe this is something that was already obvious to some of us, is the way that disregard that in many ways that our society has to children. Because I think that kids throughout this whole thing over the last year and their needs all of that has been disregarded by society. We just have said, okay, stay home. We're going to put you in Zoom classes. It doesn't really work for most of you, whatever, you know, we're willing to sacrifice that. We're willing to sacrifice your education, your well-being, your mental and emotional well-being, your development. We're willing to, you know, your joy and your happiness as a child. We're willing to take all of that away so that we, the adults, can feel safe. And that's what makes it all the more infuriating because, again, this is not a big danger for kids. So all of these things that we're doing with our kids, we're doing it for our own sake. We keep the schools shut for our sake. We, you know, keep them off the playgrounds for our sake. You know, you make two-year-olds wear masks on a plane and they're terrified. They don't know why they have to wear this damn thing and they can't breathe. And what are we doing that for? We're not doing it for them. There's almost no risk being posed to them
right
by the coronavirus at the age of two. We're doing it for us so that we can feel better. And I think that's revealed something very disturbing about our culture.
And when they do go to school and when they do open up, to quote you, white kids are taught to hate their whiteness. Boys are taught to hate their masculinity. Girls are taught to hate their their femininity. Children of all races and both sexes are taught to hate their country. This has to stop. And I don't know how, when so many parents that care about this, myself included, have put our kids in private schools that are smaller, that are more engaging, and so many more people are homeschooling. I know you have children of your own. This concerns me because parents are going to have to reengage in the public schools or we're going to lose another generation.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, as much as it's kind of a weird thing for me and for a lot of us that have been critics of the public school system, as I have always been, because I'm on one hand advocating fiercely for the public schools to open again, but also I'm a huge critic of the public schools, and I think that public schools are doing an enormous disservice and a lot of damage to our kids. But, you know, that's kind of like the double-edged sword thing. The problem is that I would be in favor of replacing the public school. I think if we could get to a place as a society where we don't have a public school system anymore, at least in the way, in the form that it is now, and everything is private or homeschool or some version like that, I mean, that would be great. But this is not, you know, to get rid of public school and then replace it with a screen is certainly not an improvement. It just makes, you know, none of the bad things go away and introduces some extra bad things that weren't there before. But yeah, regardless of the pandemic and the lockdowns and everything, we know that kids are being sent to the schools and they're being brainwashed into this kind of self-loathing where they're taught explicitly, and not just kids too. I mean, this is people, we know Coca-Cola, I mean, companies are subjecting their employees to this stuff, but kids are more susceptible to it. You know, it's a lot easier to brainwash a child, and that's what our public school system has long known and taken advantage of, but they're being conditioned into hating.
It's almost exactly a year ago that you published Church of Cowards, a wake-up call to complacent Christians. If you were going to add an addendum at the end, what anecdotal story would you tell? Is it worse? What would you say to that?
I think, yeah, it was an interesting time to publish that book because that book came out just a couple of weeks before all the lockdowns started. And so obviously none of that is included in the book. But I think, unfortunately, much of what happened during the lockdowns illustrated the point I was making in that book, as so many churches willingly shut their doors for months on end, with no resistance. Now, this isn't the case across the board. Obviously there are some glorious exceptions to this rule. And there were, you know, pastors that went to jail. You know, it's like we've already gotten to the point where we're almost forgetting that happened in this country and less than a year ago, where pastors were being sent to jail or fined for simply trying to hold worship services. So there were some exceptions, but I think there were a lot of churches and a lot of church leaders that were willing to go along with it and not defend our most basic rights as Americans and as Christians. So if I were to republish that book, I think that there would certainly have to be a chapter, at least one, about that.
But there again, I think we're revealing the bias, prejudice, disdain from certain people in public life and media toward the church rather than in some way leading to it. It's not the response to the pandemic that they're so angry about. It's as if that's a prejudice or bias that they brought to the table. Matt, last question. What are you up to these days? We got a new book in the works. The podcast. What are you doing?
Yeah, I don't have a new book in the works right now. I kind of, every time I write a book, I swear off writing books ever again, and then until I catch the bug again, then I write another one. So it's kind of a disease in that way. But right now, I'm not working on a book. But I do have the podcast that I'm putting most of my energy into, the Matt Walsh Show. And I think it's growing. You know, we're building something, but I'm proud of what we have going right now. And you go to YouTube and find that, dailywire.com, iTunes, pretty much anywhere.
Well, Daily Wire seems to have caught fire, a lot of momentum, and you are a big part of that, along with, of course, Ben Shapiro and some other great folks, Michael Knowles. Matt Walsh, always a pleasure. Come back anytime. Love your stuff.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.